Hey guys, this is Dean. I just want to give you a heads up before we get into this episode that this is a little bit of a heavy episode. We get into a lot of misogyny and a little bit of exploitation of a minor. It might not be for everyone, this episode, so I just want to give you a heads up before we get into it. If this is something that you might not want to be a part of, I totally understand. But I think it's a valuable episode to be put out there, so please, I hope you listen to it. If not, I totally understand. I just want to give you a heads up front. So that being said, I hope you enjoy this episode. If not, I totally understand. Not that you really have anything to prove to me. So we're gonna get into it in just a sec. I love you. That's it. Bye. Welcome to Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. I'm your host, Dean Beaver, and I'm once again joined by my lovely wife, Meredith Lyons.
Hello.
We have another returning guest in the studio with us today. I don't know if you've listened to any recent podcasts, but we've come up with a kind of a hierarchy for guests. We have a very special guest, which is first time, and then we have recurring correspondent, which is second time. And then we have third, which is friend of the podcast. So I'm very pleased to announce friend of the podcast, Joe Ramsky, back to the podcast. Thank you, Joe.
Oh, is this what we're doing this time?
Yeah.
I think that's the syndicated sound for whenever anyone has a friend of the podcast on, right?
We're still working on that trademark, but
okay. Fair, totally fair.
So Joe, you've been on the podcast before. So for those of you who aren't listening,
go about your day.
I'm coming down.
No trouble to you.
All right. Those of you who haven't listened to the podcast before, if you could just give us a quick rundown of your life right now, what all you're doing, what games you're playing, what you're excited about. Let's get at that.
Yes. Well, okay, great. So my life right now, I just got married this past fall. Dean and Meredith were there. It was a serious party. I crowd surfed to My Chemical Romance. So basically, really, my life is all downhill from here because I don't know what else I could strive for. But no, so that was great. I'm currently in the final stages of a novel, which is super great. That's what I've been working on. And then also, my wife and I have a small but growing candle business here in Chicago, Illinois, called Backup Plan Candles, which has also been great. Have a new candle coming out for Mother's Day. That's pretty sick. And then my brief history. I feel like, Dean, there was a thing. There was either a question that you asked about how I would maybe it was like summarizing my life in a tweet, but also, you know, tweeting may not exist soon as we elder millennials know it.
We can only hope.
Yeah, truly. God, that guy.
If you would like to hear Joseph Ramsky's story in the span of a tweet, you can listen to two other episodes, namely
It's true. I think I gave different tweets for both of those, actually. But I used to act, and then the pandemic happened, and I stopped doing that. And now I do other stuff. And, what else? Oh, you said games. So I'm trying to finish God of War Ragnarok right now, just because a friend of mine lent it to me and I stopped playing it for a while once I got to the middle section where, spoiler alert, Atreus goes on a magical quest to feed some animals, and I was like, this has nothing to do with the story.
But I play God of War.
Yes. And I'm just, you know, there's only one game series that I would drop literally everything else in my life for, and its newest entry is coming out on May 12th, and that's The Legend of Zelda. And Tears of the Kingdom. And once that game comes out, I will disappear for 4 days. Like, it's fact. Awesome. My job doesn't know yet, my wife doesn't know yet, but it's gonna be a fun time.
You're gonna come out and have a full beard, like, what year is it?
Yeah. we're supposed to go to New York to see my brother-in-law for his 30th birthday, and yeah, I told Sarah, I was like, there is, you know, truly only one other thing that I love more than The Legend of Zelda, and that's Jeffrey Geis. And she just kind of looked at me with this blank stare, and she was like, I don't know what to say to this. And I was like, that's fine. Just kidding. Just kidding. She knows I'm joking. Anyway, I think I answered all your questions, right?
Good enough for baseball.
Okay, great.
The new Zelda looks pretty fun. I sent you a weird picture earlier of the main villain without his beard.
I'm sorry. It looks pretty fun, Dan. Yeah. Why are you choosing violence on your own podcast?
It's The Legend of Zelda Nuts and Bolts. You can build vehicles out of things that you find.
Audience, this man wants me to start running through a tornado to Nashville so I can verbally and physically spar with him. I just want you all to know that.
It does look like a lot of fun. Zelda is great. It's not my first choice. Like Mega Man would not be your first choice.
That's fair. It's true.
But I'm probably going to pick it up. Probably going to bend a knee for the DLC campaign that comes out. But I mean, I got Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection to get through before I get to that. So anyway, Meredith, do you have anything that you want to add before we get in?
Add to what?
I don't. It was just me and Joseph talking for a long time, so I was.
I had nothing to add to any of that.
I felt like you were left out.
I was eating cheese. I was fine.
You did have a very distinct look of as we were talking about these games and eating your cheese. You were just like, "What? I have no idea what these words coming from these white boys' mouths mean." You were just kind of like, "Sure, yeah. There is a kingdom, and there are tears. Got it. Okay. They're talking about nuts and bolts for something. I don't. You know."
I was texting a friend during part of it.
I'm leaving that in so you can hear your shame on the podcast that you never listen to. That you're a part of. So that being said, let's go ahead and get into today's episode. Joe, by this point, you know the deal. I've got this book report that I've written. Please feel free to interrupt me at every chance that you have a question or something along those lines.
What about comment?
That too.
What about concern?
You're going to have concerns about this one either way.
What about constructive criticism?
No.
You shall not question the
book. Not on my part! Okay. But anyway, we're going to jump right in. But please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, which you will have, please feel free to interrupt us. I will give a little bit of a content warning at the beginning of this. We're going to dip our toes into misogyny. So
that's like my everyday.
For the listeners at home, before we started recording, Dean was like, this one is spicy. And then we tried to get him to define spicy. And then all he said is, you're going to want hand sanitizer afterwards. And I was like, okay, great. Cool.
So.
So, all right. And I've been on the episode about people boning,
molesting dolphins,
jerking dolphins off,
and dolphin suicide.
That was a thing too. I invite you to listen to our episode about John C. Lilly and Echo the Dolphin. I did not edit that at all, and you can hear it. But that being the case, let's go ahead and jump into the episode. Jeff Spangenberg was born in 1968. Not much is known about Spangenberg's early life, aside from the fact that he left college early to pursue a career in computer programming.
And that his name was ridiculous.
I was going to say, Googleable as shit.
By the late 1980s, he'd risen to the position of lead designer and president of Punk Studios in Sunnyvale, California.
Spangenberg Studios? Sorry.
What's up?
I said not Spangenberg Studios? Come on.
You're going to find that Spangenberg has an oeuvre for naming studios. Following this success, he left Punk Studios to form his own studio, Iguana Entertainment. What?
Already we're getting weird, but in like a sort of like 90s vaporwave way, I feel like.
It's one of those things like, what are we going to name our studio? Iguanas are cool.
Iguanas are so cool.
Give me another sentence and we'll talk about some weird naming conventions. So he started his own studio, Iguana Entertainment. After moving Iguana from Sunnyvale to Austin, Texas, The company was bought by Acclaim Entertainment. Now, Acclaim, they made their own games, but they also ported a lot of arcade games to home systems. Here's the thing. Acclaim was founded by three ex-Activision employees. Activision is another, like, still really big video game publisher.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the name, Activision. Acclaim named themselves Acclaim to show up in the book, the phone book, before Activision and another company called Accolade, which was another ex-Activision employee company.
What an incredible, first of all, brilliant, ballsy move. Like,
not quite done.
Second of all, such a 90s move, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Activision themselves had named themselves Activision in order to appear in the phone book before Atari. So this is just par for the course.
Sidebar, and this is for the portion of non-listeners who exclusively worked in Chicago theater. Is that for some reason why every company was named Red something? Because I feel like maybe there was a Chicago theater phone book and it started with the R's and everyone wanted to...
You're kind of right.
Welcome. Thank you. Welcome to Red Falcon Theater.
Yeah.
You're right. Why was everything red? Why was nothing blue or green?
I don't know. Maybe everyone in Chicago is just pissed off.
Probably. Time.
Especially honestly, in the winter. In the winter. And when they get in their cars all season round. Let's be real.
Under Acclaim's ownership, Iguana Entertainment's greatest achievement was Turok, Dinosaur Hunter.
Did anyone else like immediately go to that Tunok 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 video in their head?
I think I'm maybe like a handful of people that still remember that.
Okay. You can delete that part.
No, I'm leaving that in. That's going to be our outro music now because I didn't know what to use. Joe, do you know about that?
No.
Okay, it was this Indian song that got really big and like a bunch of people made fake words up to it because they didn't know it. They didn't know the language. So they made fake captions. And those they have since been deleted. They were like really they were kind of funny. I mean, they were meant in fun, but I mean they've been deleted. Probably they got
probably
in trouble
in racial probably to adhere to racial sensitivity and things like that. But I just liked it. I liked it because I heard the song and I saw the music video and I had no
It was
clue
like a fun song
on.
To like, oh yeah, you see the music video and you have no clue what's going on at all. But I'm sure it's very Bollywood or something, but the guy like multiplies several times. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
We can talk about this after the podcast, but
yes.
Sure. Yeah.
It was a good song to work out to.
So Iguana's Entertainment's greatest achievement was Turok Dinosaur Hunter, which was released on the Nintendo 64 in 1997.
Great game.
The game is a first-person shooter that follows Tal Set, a Native American warrior who assumes the role of Turok within his tribe. As Turok, Tal Set travels to the Lost Lands, a savage realm where time has no meaning. There he battles against dinosaurs and aliens to stop an evil overlord known as the Campaigner, who seeks the legendary Chrono Scepter to destroy the barrier separating the real world and the Lost Lands so he can rule over both.
See, now, Dean, let me, Mr. Beaver, sir, I'm going to stop you right there. These days, they just don't know what great entertainment is. And it's because they have never experienced games like Turok before, with its robust plotting, deep character mechanics, and dinosaurs and aliens. That's really, really, I think, what it comes down to.
I think I could be wrong. This is maybe me espousing semantics for a bit, but I feel like the Nintendo 64, PlayStation 1 era, that was kind of the last console generation where you could just throw shit at the wall and it would maybe stick or maybe it wouldn't. Like, you could take wide swings and not necessarily expect a big return as far as plot goes.
It's because, you know, they didn't have, I mean, they barely had enough room for polygons to make up what you were seeing on the screen. So, like, they just didn't have any room for bullshit like modern games do. Yeah. So they had to just make sure that the the ingredients of the story were as just airtight as possible. And, you know, that's why something like a chronoscepter is your MacGuffin. You know, yeah. You save time and money.
Not to mention that in the game, you save time because it's the chronoscepter.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. The non-listeners familiar with the Chicago theater scene will probably understand that pun, but maybe not anybody else.
For the record, Iguana also worked on the two Nintendo 64 South Park games, South Park and South Park Chef's Love Shack. The incredibly low quality of these two games would eventually lead South Park creators Matt Stone and Trey Parker to demand greater supervision over future video games based off of the franchise.
But isn't South Park's thing that it's kind of low quality looking?
You're not incorrect, but these games were just terrible. Like, yeah. They were also first-person shooters. Oh. Like, I remember playing it at a friend's house, and the whole thing is that, like, your basic weapon was a snowball, and if you pressed a button, you could pee on the snowball and get more damage.
I mean, that's not un-South Park, but it is gross.
Yeah. And that was before South Park took the turn into like high satire, but
one would argue that you know, by peeing on your snowball to make it stronger, they were already satirizing gameplay mechanics, maybe a little bit. You know,
I mean, they had that episode where you ate your food through your butt and then you puked out your poop.
I'm going to continue with the script that I have written.
Okay. Just here for context.
You're not in. How many times am I going to say that?
Completely correct.
How many years has South Park been on the air? 26, something like that.
Yeah,
it's a human that could rent a car.
If it gets to 2027, then that's 30 years. So
my God,
what about the Simpsons?
Simpsons need to die already.
How long has The Simpsons been on the air, though?
1987.
Yeah.
It'll be 40 years for them.
Because I remember the first episode.
My God.
Aging myself.
Spangenberg was fired from Iguana Entertainment by Acclaim Management in 1998.
I'm going to be honest. I forgot about Spangenberg.
Spangenberg. Do not forget about Spangenberg. Spangenberg was fired from Iguana Entertainment by Acclaim Management in 1998. While no official reason for Spangenberg's firing has been given, that didn't stop him from suing his former employer for breach of contract and fraud. In the lawsuit, Spangenberg alleged that Acclaim's founder, Gregory Fischbach, had urged him to purchase $25,000 in Acclaim shares and convinced him to keep them just before being fired, locking him out of any potential stock options.
I will say that it's of no surprise to me that all of these real-life characters sound like characters from Rocko's Modern Life, you know, with these last names and everything, because I just keep, for some reason, maybe it's the day I'm having, maybe it's the fact that the spring has been very strange, maybe because the barometric pressure in Chicago has been all over the map today, but I just keep envisioning BoJack Horseman style anthropomorphic animal characters whenever you're talking about any of these folks, Dean.
I feel you're like not incorrect.
Stop talking, Meredith, please. I love you. Anyway, let's keep going.
Yes.
He sued Acclaim. The case was settled in 2000 for an undisclosed amount. Free of Acclaim and with a wealth of financial resources, Spangenberg went on to open a new game development studio, Retro Studios.
No way! Get the fuck out of here! No fucking way! Excuse my language, but oh my God.
In 1998.
What?
We're gonna get crazy.
Oh, jeebus. Oh my gosh. Sorry, audience.
I'm looking forward to this now.
Oh my gosh. Oh, this is both so exciting and also pretty terrifying.
Oh God, this is gonna be so good.
Dude, how could you do this to me?
We're gonna touch on where you think we're going, and then we're gonna move on. into darker territory.
Oh, God. All right. Fine.
So Spangenberg went on to open a new game development studio, Retro Studios, in 1998. Knowing that Nintendo was impressed with Turok, he set out to make a studio that created more mature games for the upcoming GameCube, becoming a tight-knit second-party developer in the process. He hired roughly 20 employees, some from out under Acclaim, greenlit construction of a 40,000-square-foot development studio, which included a state-of-the-art viewing theater, and ordered his staff to start production on 4 launch titles for the Nintendo GameCube. All thanks to generous contributions from Nintendo, of course.
Of course.
These 4 projects included 1. NFL Retro Football, a generic football game. 2. Car Combat, a monster truck racing game later renamed Thunder Rally.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Ravenblade, a fantasy role-playing game.
Is it weird that I remember hearing about that game when I was a small boy excited for the Nintendo GameCube?
It does have a name that just kind of rolls off the tongue. And last, Action Adventure, a shooting game.
Let's just call it a genre.
Hang on. Action Adventure, a shooting game starring 3 spacefaring heroines, later renamed Metaforce. Does that sound a little familiar?
No. Yes.
Okay,
yes,
moving on.
It does.
None of these sound familiar to me.
Unfortunately, things didn't exactly go swimmingly during this time. 4 simultaneous projects may have been a bit much for a small team, especially considering that Retro Studios only had 1 GameCube development kit.
Come on, guys. Jesus.
So, Meredith, imagine that you, like, work at this, like, weird author collective.
I get it. They're like, they don't, it's like Nashville. They don't have the infrastructure to support the people.
Let me rephrase this. Meredith, imagine that you work at a storefront theater company. That's all yep. I was going to say.
Anyway, imagine you're writing a...
You guys are going to do much more work than your bodies can handle.
Uh-huh.
And for much less pay than you deserve. And
uh-huh.
You'll eat crackers.
Yep.
Imagine you're writing a novel and then 3 other authors have to write their own novels on the same computer.
That sounds silly.
So that's the situation.
I'm irritated. Now I'm tired and irritated. I need more wine.
So they only had 1 GameCube development kit. Also, many of the staff hadn't actually worked on a video game before, as most came from the movie industry.
What?
Okay, so now we've got people trying to write novels on the same computer as me, but they were newspaper people before.
Yep.
That's really...
By the year 2000, all 4 projects looked like glorified tech demos and nowhere near the breakout titles they needed to be in a year and a half for the GameCube's launch.
Well, whose fault is that? Let's be honest.
Oh, we'll get there.
I think I know, but go ahead. It's your podcast.
Then there was Spangenberg.
Spangenberg!
Doesn't he sound like a made-up country? Like in Disney?
It really does. Yeah, or like someplace that got absorbed into Germany at some point, you know?
it's like a Disneyland full of ice that, you know, the hero has to go to like... Anyway, it's fine. Go ahead.
So then there was Spangenberg. Jeff came in to work when he wanted to, which was almost never. By this point, it was evident that Jeff enjoyed a certain lifestyle, which included fast, expensive cars, gorgeous, scantily clad women, and lots of partying.
You know, the typical game developer lifestyle.
Yeah. So he's Bruce Wayne, but with no money.
Yeah, well, he's got some money, but staff at Retro had ballooned to about 150 at this point, but without strong direction, the company was hemorrhaging money.
Must be nice.
All of this climaxed into a surprise visit from Nintendo executives.
Climaxed.
Save that for later.
Oh, no.
All of this climaxed into a surprise visit from Nintendo executives, which included Shigeru Miyamoto.
Oh, shit. Shiggy's coming to town. Oh my God, there's
Shiggy.
Meredith, because I know that you don't know everyone who's involved in video games. A few words about Shigeru Miyamoto. He is widely
the Shakespeare of video games.
He's or Shiggy, as Joe calls him.
I'm sure he's been called that all of his life. Not necessarily in his own country, but he is widely regarded as one of, if not the most influential video game designer ever.
Yep.
Originally intending to become a manga artist, he was convinced to join Nintendo in 1977. There, he designed Nintendo's first big arcade hit, Donkey Kong, in 1981.
Maybe you've heard of it. Maybe, audience, maybe you've heard of Donkey Kong.
It was, I have heard of Donkey Kong.
Following this success, he designed most of Nintendo's biggest franchises, including Super Mario, The Legend of Zelda, Star Fox, F-Zero, and Nintendogs.
You forgot Pikmin, Dean.
I refuse to acknowledge Pikmin! Following the passing of then-president Satoru Iwata, Miyamoto assumed the role of acting president alongside designer Genyo Takeda. Takeda is one of Nintendo's higher-up technical guys. He basically designed the Wii. So there's that. He also worked on the first Punch-Out.
For our listeners who are sports fans, this is basically the 90s Bulls.
Yeah.
For video games.
Or the 89 Bears?
Or the 89, yeah, or the 89 Bears.
We're not here to cause any trouble. Shigeru Miyamoto was later named Creative Fellow.
Can we call him Shiggy from now on?
He's not going to stay around for too much longer.
So we can call him Shiggy.
We don't talk about that, okay? Oh, you mean in the story.
Yeah.
I was like, just because the man is getting up there does not mean...
No, Miyamoto is going to stay there until he dies.
Okay, thank you.
His current contract with Nintendo states that he is not allowed to bike to work to prevent the possibility of him being struck and killed by a car.
I mean, yeah, we got to protect father. Like, that's an obvious...
I mean, obvious. As someone who's been hit by cars twice commuting while in the bike lane, I get it.
This is fascinating to me because, Meredith, I don't think you remember this, but we recorded an episode a long time ago. But I mentioned this exact same fact in that episode, and you were up in arms. You were like, why is he not allowed to do this? He should be able to do this if he wants. Fucking male culture.
I mean, I was probably drunker than I am now.
It was an afternoon.
So? Why are you trying to shame your wife, Dean?
I'm not. The difference in reaction is interesting to me. Is what I'm saying.
When I'm interested in this now too, because like there is part of me that's like he should be able to do what he wants, but there's also part of me that's like, yeah, you could die that way.
Yeah.
Because I almost did. So, but maybe that is why. Maybe at the time my mom was like on me about biking, and I was like, meh. Anyway,
I do what I want.
Yeah. Miyamoto was not impressed by what he had seen, though he saw the most potential in action adventure. Most team leads were taken into individual meetings and more or less chewed out by Miyamoto's team. Nintendo also managed to find evidence of a softcore pornographic website called Sinful Summer being hosted by an email address belonging to Retro Studios.
What?
Furthermore, the content was hosted on Nintendo-purchased hardware and timestamped to normal middle-of-the-day business hours. Now... Oh. Who might be the one behind this? Why? A man named Jeff Spangenberg.
Spangenberg, you naughty, naughty country.
What a battle axe that guy.
Oh, we are touching the surface.
This is just the surface?
Yep.
We're not even at like diving level yet? Oh my God.
We're not. No,
Jesus.
We're not. We are.
I don't even know if it's an actual term when it comes to seafaring.
We are looking at the iceberg from a ship far away.
From the crow's nest, as it were. Nautical metaphors.
Nautical metaphors. I guess softcore summer. It's called
Sinful Summer.
Sinful Summer. Jesus, Joe, where's your brain going? I was like, I guess. guess it's appropriately titled, you know, if this is just a tip.
Basically what Spangenberg would do is he would hire strippers to come out to his mansion and he would film it and put it up on the internet.
So he's starting OnlyFans, but
yeah, he's a real trailblazer.
True pioneer.
Strap yourself in. Nintendo offered $1 million for Spangenberg's controlling shares of Retro Studios, assuming full ownership of the company and making it an internal development studio. Multiple employees reported that corporate culture drastically improved following Spangenberg's departure.
Are we surprised?
While all projects were ultimately canceled, Action Adventure went on to become the basis for Metroid Prime, which is widely regarded as one of the greatest games ever made.
And let me tell you, audience, I assume that Dean brought me here because I not only second this opinion, but having just played through it, and I'm pretty sure Dean did as well. That thing holds up. It holds the up. Okay. That's all I'm going to say.
It's an objectively fantastic game. And the remastered version came out, I want to say a month and a half ago, somewhere around there.
Yes, even though it existed in our hearts all along.
But they added a bunch of new control schemes, which I really appreciated. But it is an objectively fantastic game. As a matter of fact, the original Metroid Prime, I looked into it for the review scores, which, I mean, review scores you take with a grain of salt. But the original had a 9.8 out of 10, and the remaster was a 10 out of 10.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
You got that going for you. I think IGN has only awarded 10 out of 10s in their history. One of which was Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, and the other or another is Metroid Prime Remastered.
Yes.
And I
can tell you that's correct, Ian, because when I was in high school, freshman in high school, and I was the one person in my friend group who owned a Nintendo GameCube, and I was rallying constantly to try and gain approval of my friends for liking Nintendo games. I brought this information to them, and they said, what the hell is that? And then I proceeded to explain it to them, and they played the game, and they were like, oh yeah, this game slaps. And I knew then that everything would be okay. And that was the episode of Dawson's Creek that I lived through in 2002.
I will 100% admit, when I heard they were making a first-person Metroid game, because I was like all in on Metroid beforehand, and it's a 2D like giant level game, which I'm like, they're making a third, like a first-person shooter Metroid game. This is gonna suck. This is gonna be awful. I'm gonna be there.
Is Metroid the one with Samus?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
And the cool thing about one of the cool things about the game is like, if you're shooting an enemy that's really close, like it makes a flash and you're looking at the game from Samus's perspective, and the like flash off of Samus's face is reflected in the visor in front of you. So like there's a split second where you see Samus's face and you're like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Audience, I know that now you're listening to this podcast in a time of miracles in which that sounds fairly lo-fi, you know, like anyone could do that in their video game.
It was revolutionary.
It truly, truly a magical moment when me, you know, a pimple-faced teenager sitting in his room playing this game for the first time, witnessed this. And I was like, oh my God, game creators are magicians.
Yes. I hope you enjoyed talking about Metroid Prime, because that is done now.
Was that our nice interlude into normalcy?
Okay. Oh no. Spangenberg was once again flush with capital and free to do as he pleased.
Ow!
He just got $1 million.
I can't believe this is the man who's remaining the protagonist of the story, or at least the character that we were following, as opposed to, you know.
I was about Samus to say Aran. Protagonist is a very strong word.
Sure.
Spangenberg was once again flush with capital and free to do as he pleased. He created yet another development studio, Top Heavy Studios,
Because he's like, this is working.
Oh, no.
He wanted to make the game of his dreams with unfettered creative freedom. Free of the whims of stockholders, producers, and those stuffed shirt Nintendo higher-ups. He courted support from and joined the Gathering of Developers, or GOD.
Oh, fucking Christ.
A sort of governing body group of developers, which had some of the biggest studios of the day as its members. Basically, what it was this collective of game developers that wanted, like, total creative freedom. Like, they wanted to make the games that they wanted without compromise.
Always works out really well, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, never mind, I'm not going to draw the parallel that I wanted to draw. So go ahead. I don't want to go there right now yet. We'll see.
On August 31st, 2004, Spangenberg unleashed his magnum opus onto the world.
Magnum?
The Guy Game.
Oh, no.
Joe, have you heard about this?
Yes, I remember this.
I know nothing about it, and I know it's bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, Meredith, you're about to have a bad time. We're all about to have a bad time, to be honest.
Remember when I said you wanted hand sanitizer?
I think you meant Everclear.
The game follows Matt Sadler, the game's host and lead writer, as he heads up a quiz show starring attractive young women during spring break on South Padre Island.
Okay.
If the woman, or hottie, as the game refers to them as.
All right. Are these women at least 21?
We'll get into that.
I need more wine.
If the woman answers the trivia question incorrectly, they must lift their bikini tops and reveal their breasts.
Are you fucking kidding me?
The player has various modes of play, including the typical trivia mode, but the most infamous has the player guessing whether or not the woman will answer the question correctly, and not necessarily guessing the correct answer themselves. So we are full on judging a woman's intellect based on her looks and questionable sobriety. The game was released for both the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox, with a Nintendo GameCube version missing for some strange reason.
Huh. Interesting.
Correctly guessing whether or not the woman answers the question accurately fills the player's chubby meter.
Are you fucking kidding me?
It's about to get so much worse.
Jesus Christ. Jesus fucking Christ, man.
Initially, the on-screen breasts are obscured by a full Guy Game logo. The more you guess correctly as to whether or not the woman answers the question correctly, the more the chubby meter fills. The more the chubby meter fills, the less censorship goes into the breasts on screen.
Can we just pause and talk about the phrase chubby meter? Because
are the women consenting to this? Are these like...
We'll talk about that.
Oh, boy.
When was this done?
It was released on August 31st, 2004.
Holy fucking shit. Have people sued?
We'll get into that.
They better have. I'm going to be so mad at you. If there's no vindication at the end, I'll be mad.
Oh, you're going to be mad either way.
Oh, and he says it with glee. Well.
Instead of a logo, the breasts are blurred, and the blurring effect becomes clearer until the breasts are on full display. Per Spangenberg, weirdly, in regards to the chubby meter specifically, quote, I'm going to ask that you just wait until you hear the full quote.
All right.
Quote, I feel innovation is incredibly important in the video game industry. With the Guy Game, we set out to do something completely different than what had been done before. We feel that guys will be extremely pleased with the final result. End quote.
It doesn't say anything!
See, like, sometimes, you know, every so often, I'm just like, you know, I don't understand why, how it's so hard for you know, like, men to just, like, not be terrible to women, you know? Like, I'm like, surely it's not that hard. Surely, like, all of this is just, you know, everyone is just taking this out of context, blowing things out of proportion. And then I hear shit like this, and I'm like, oh no, yeah, men are trash, and we should all be shot into the sun or something. Yep. But also, what is he even talking about? There's no innovation there to speak of that he's actually like doing. You know
what? The innovation he's going in is to making men work to see women's breasts. That's what he's doing, which isn't an innovation. It's
no.
I don't even know what it is.
There's nothing, it would be innovation if, like, you know, I don't know, he taught them about consent, honestly, but
not our old boy Spangenberg.
Yeah, not Spangenberg.
I am furious.
Meredith, I think out of the three of us, you're allowed to go off at this point.
Yeah.
No, I think it's better if Joe goes off. Because maybe men will listen to Joe.
Meredith, do you want us to Google Spangy's address, and then we could just do a quick TP?
No, I want my husband to finish the episode that he created.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and move on. In order,
good luck to
him.
Godspeed.
In order to cool certain tempers. The Guy game received the negative critical reception you'd hope it would. Once you got beyond the shallow, sophomoric subject matter, it had little replay value, because...
So once you'd seen everyone's breasts, you were pretty much done seeing their breasts. So why buy the game when you could get the game?
The source I took a lot of this information from said that it was marketed as something you'd like whip out at parties, which...
What kind of parties?
Parties I don't want to be associated with.
Yeah.
But that's the best explanation.
Probably bachelor parties.
Maybe.
Parties for dudes who didn't know how to talk to girls, or for quote-unquote nice guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meredith, I think you'll be happy with this. One review stated, quote, "The idea behind the Guy game is similar to playing Trivial Pursuit in a strip club. However, actually playing this horrendous mass of immorality could be compared to stapling your eyelids to a jet plane. There's absolutely no reason you should want to do it. Nudity or not, this is one game that should keep its top on."
I mean, first of all, kudos to that writer for the low-hanging fruit pun at the end of their sentence, but then also great job using the image of stapling one's eyelids to a jet plane, because
that's something I don't ever want to do.
I have never thought about that in my life, but as soon as you read that, I was like, oh yeah, no, I don't ever want to do that. And also, what? So this game must have really been
terrible, even for 2004.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2004. Oh, you mean 2004, the zenith of our culture?
Again, going back to the source, and I'll name the source at the end of the episode, but he was like, this thing is so 2004, it should have been like packaged with another like nudity game that I might talk about a little bit later. It's a biking game called BMX XXX, and it was originally supposed to be a Dave Mira, like Tony Hawk Pro Skater game, kind of the same thing, until Dave Mira heard about it, and he was like, no, I'm suing in order to make sure that this doesn't happen, and my name is not attached to this. But he was like, this should be packaged with BMX XXX and like a fucking Crazy Town CD or something like that.
It's like really shocking to me to realize how much like casual misogyny was in early 2000s culture. Like, thinking back on it, I was just talking to someone about. Oh yeah, I mean, like, it's and this is probably for another podcast episode, but like, I was talking to someone recently about just the treatment of Britney Spears in the early 2000s, and so. Getting on that, you know, on the sort of a similar wavelength of
well, we could also just... I mean, this is a little further back, but we could talk about Monica Lewinsky.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. That too. Not that much, you know, longer before that time period either.
About 'cause what
was
it?
That
so.
Was like Yeah, that was only a decade or so beforehand. So, like,
which, by the way, everyone follow Monica Lewinsky on Twitter and Instagram because she's fucking hilarious. I'm going to say that right now.
I believe you.
I believe you would have to develop a sense of humor. I do remember hearing like an interview with her, and she was like, "Why should I have to give up my name? He didn't have to give up his name."
Boom.
And like, let's not forget that she was an intern in her early 20s when this happened to her, and he was fucking president of the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, misogyny, you were doing your dissertation on misogyny?
Yep. Critical reception, however, didn't deal the death blow to the guy game, but rather, one of its participants did. About 4 months after the guy game was released, a young woman came forward and sued the gathering of developers, their parent company, Take-Two Entertainment, Top Heavy Studios, Microsoft, and Sony, claiming that she was approached by the game's staff and not adequately informed in which the manner of the footage shot of her would be used.
Oh, Jesus.
At the time of recording...
Color me fucking surprised.
At the time of recording, she was 17 years old. Legally making the guy game child pornography.
There we go! Snap, snap, motherfuckers!
Jesus Christ.
The judge ordered the guy game sale be banned in North America immediately.
I am pleased.
But this didn't stop Top Heavy Studios from squandering all of their hard work.
Oh my god.
No pun intended with hard.
You are not endearing yourself to me at all.
Yeah, Dean, you're gonna die after this episode. Like, I can see it in Meredith's eyes. Like, you know, I was gonna say this for the sign off, but it you know, I'm glad to have known you for all these years. I will make sure to say something nice at the funeral.
What funeral?
You know what? Let's be real for a second. One of the things that I wanted to do when I started this podcast was I wanted to present a lot of stories that a lot of people might not have heard. Which
you have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've tried anyway. We have over 1,000 plays according to Spotify for podcasters, as they call it now.
Ooh.
But I wanted to get a lot of stories out there that a lot of people might not have heard. A lot of those stories might not necessarily be happy ones, but I'd rather it be out there and be recognized than, you know, somebody sweeping it out under the table. So,
sweeping it under the rug, you mean?
Whatever.
Because sweeping it out under the table.
So,
what if there's a table under the or a rug under the
table? It sounds like you might be sweeping it out from under the table and other people are sweeping it under the rug.
I think Jeff Spangenberg wants it to be swept under the rug.
A follow-up question. Why don't you just vacuum it? Like, you know, like...
Because it's still in the bag then. Still process the bag for evidence.
I'm going to keep talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the judge...
You torture us, we torture you.
Seems fair. The judge ordered the guy game sale be banned in North America immediately, but this didn't stop Top Heavy Studios from squandering all of their hard work. They took the opportunity to advertise on their website. Quote, "The rumors are true. The most controversial video game ever created. The guy game is no longer available." They followed
this. So they were just leaning into the dirt.
Yeah, when you say here. Squander... You mean...
Well, they sent a guy to South Padre Island for a week with a film crew and convinced a bunch of college-age girls to reveal themselves in front of the camera. That probably took a lot of money, which probably came straight from Jeff Spangenberg, who only got $1 million for his controlling shares of Retro Studios.
Right.
So they got to recoup it somehow.
My God.
Right, but when you say squandered means like... To bleed money, basically. Like,
yeah. I mean, you can't make a whole lot of money on a game that, quote unquote, game that's only available for 4 months.
Right.
They took the opportunity to advertise on their website that the guy game was no longer available. They followed this with a re-release of the game for DVD titled The Guy Game, Game Over, which featured just the film sequences, some additional content that was cut from the game, and one important omission.
No girls.
No singular girl.
Oh, the one girl.
Yeah.
So
they still put all the other girls out there?
Yep.
These mofos.
What fucking idiots. Like, they don't know how old these girls are.
They legit were like, you know what? Hold up. We know that we fucked up, but we're going to do the exact same thing, except we're going to remove every aspect of this being a video game and just make it into a Girls Gone Wild video that probably, to mirror this point, has more underage women on it.
Underage that we know of. Of age that we know of. Nobody else.
They don't know. I mean, what idiots do they have to be? Like, you've had one girl come forward saying she was 17.
Well, you've got all this footage. You got to use it somehow.
I mean, oh my God.
I'm being completely facetious, but.
I know, but.
God.
Needless to say, the DVD did not perform well. Top Heavy Studios folded quickly thereafter, declaring bankruptcy. The Guy Game Game Over DVD was their last published work. Retro Studios has had an extremely successful career as a Nintendo development studio, with the Metroid Prime trilogy receiving overwhelmingly positive reviews. No one knows what exactly happened to Jeff Spangenberg.
I do. I can tell you that his chubby meter ran out.
Nobody knows exactly what happened to Jeff Spangenberg, who seems to have dropped off the face of the earth. His name has not been associated with any projects since. The Guy Game is one of 46 games currently banned from being streamed by Twitch.
Wow.
So that is the story of Jeff Spangenberg and The Guy Game. I want to give special thanks to honorary friend of the podcast, Haley Stoker, for helping edit the script for this podcast. I had a few questions as to what was acceptable, and it was just my voice, so I wanted to run it by somebody else, a quote-unquote neutral third party, to make sure it was as respectable as possible. So I ran it by her, and she really helped out. I'm really appreciative to her. So, sources for this episode, I'm gonna give these out, and then we can talk a little bit more about what to take away from this. But sources for this episode are two different What Happened episodes from YouTuber Matt McMuscles. The first is What Happened Metroid Prime and What Happened The Guy Game. But again, both by Matt McMuscles. I'll have links to both of those in the description of this podcast. We also have about 6 Wikipedia articles for Jeff Spangenberg, Acclaim Studios Austin, formerly known as Iguana Entertainment, Acclaim Entertainment itself, Turok the Dinosaur Hunter, The Guy Game, and The Gathering Developers. So, obviously, this is not the feel-good episode of Opening Stage VGH, but I think it's still an important video story to tell as a cautionary tale of somebody with a lot of money and somebody who thinks they have a lot of creative freedom and the comeuppance that they inevitably get as a result. So
one would hope that they inevitably get as a result. It's not always the case. I mean, had that girl not come forward, and like, let's be real, coming forward was not always a guarantee of anything.
Exactly.
Is still not always a guarantee
of
anything as a woman. Like,
and typically results in a lot of pain and suffering.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So she did like a brave thing in coming forward. And also, had she not, you wonder if it might still be going on in some iteration.
I actually did see something on Reddit the other day. Somebody posted a picture of them looking through a used game lot or something along those lines. And they posted it to Reddit, and it was a sealed copy of The Guy Game being sold at like some whatever game retail resell place. And it was like, whoever's running this place obviously has no idea what's going on in this game.
One would hope. Yeah. One would hope that they don't.
But and again, this is something that Matt McMuscles goes into in his video about the game, but it has become this like weird, creepy collector's item, like this Necronomicon of video gaming.
I'm not surprised. And I don't think any woman will be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like, it's a thing in that many men on Earth still consider us as little more than cats or dogs, objects.
Mm-hmm.
And that
obviously shouldn't be the case. And I'm glad that it got the critical reception that it did, because that kind of thing isn't cool. It wasn't cool then, and it's not cool now, nor should it ever be cool. But it's still something that happened, and I think it's a cautionary tale of somebody who thought he was really hot shit because he made a good Nintendo 64 game in 1997. And
we have similar people who have made it all the way to Office.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
or Creative Office.
Yep. When I was acting in Chicago at around the same time as this game came out, maybe a little later, I was in a comedy show and I had the director introduce me to a very prominent casting director in Chicago. I'm not acting anymore. His name rhymed with O'Pommel. And he said, "Hey, this is Meredith. She's really funny." And O'Pommel said, "Are you easy?"
Jesus Christ.
And I went, "No." And he went, "You'll never make it in this business then." And the director that I was with kind of went, "Ha ha 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 ha." Because he was a dude and he didn't know what to do.
Oh, and this guy's, O'Pommel's such a kidder.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Meredith.
A thing that happened. It's just, it's like, I think it's more common than not.
I think that obviously this saga, let's call it that, this saga is about 20 years old, and very arguably there's not been a whole lot of forward progress in recognizing.
I want to say there has been some forward progress.
There's been some.
Yeah. I don't think that this kind of game would get made today. You know?
It wouldn't.
But there's also been backward progress.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like there's been forward progress in what we can say and what we can produce media wise, but there's been backward progress in what we as women can do. Like, we can't have abortions anymore. We're not in control of our own bodies anymore. Like, oh, you can't say things about us or objectify us outwardly.
Yeah.
Like, you can still do it in private and all that shit. So it's just, it's almost become, I don't want to say it's become worse.
You can.
It's become better in some areas and worse in others.
It's become worse in that we don't have as many like rights to our own selves.
Yeah.
It's become better in that people are not legally allowed to exploit us as much in the media, but I don't think the attitude is better overall. And I feel like that's probably the same with many minorities and definitely with people who aren't cisgender.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean,
they're being outwardly attacked.
Yeah, the LGBTQIA plus community is for sure feeling most of this now from my perspective, you know, just having a lot of friends who identify as such. And it definitely, definitely feels like we're going through, as a country, we're going through a period of regression, like hardcore regression.
It's like we're going through a fascism test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, are we going to tolerate the fascism or not? And I got to give a little shout out to the Tennessee Three. Gave me a little bit of hope.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I forgot that you guys are probably much closer to that story than the rest of the nation. But
physically, we live about 3 miles away from where all of that went down.
Like 1 mile away. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, damn. Like, I mean,
We have a friend who was in the courtroom while they were being, quote unquote, tried.
Really? Holy shit.
But I've never donated to campaign funds so fast in my life.
Yeah.
And so proud of Memphis because they basically blackmailed them. They were like, if you put him back on, we're going to take away like money for your schools and shit like that.
Yeah.
But they put him back on.
Also, maybe not unrelated to what we've talked about today, but the Tennessee GOP vice chair earlier today was found guilty of sexually harassing an intern. And yeah. While he was being confronted about that, admitted to sexually harassing another intern. And he resigned today, which he should, because fuck that dude. Yeah, all of that to say is that women have not had a good go of it. And a lot of people like to be like, oh, well, we gave him the right to vote and all of that shit. That's not enough. Like, people are being exploited, like, as early as, you know, a few weeks ago, but also as early as, you know, 20 years ago.
The dawn of civilization.
Yeah, there's that. But, like, also in 2004, when some guy thought it would be really funny to make a Girls Gone Wild Trivial Pursuit game.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I was thinking, like, even on, like, the most practical of levels, you know, I know I made a joke about, like, being a part of a storefront theater company and everything, but, like,
yeah,
I, on a more serious note, like, having been a part of creative organizations like that before, all of them are, you know, they have their problems and everything, but I feel like I've had the fortune of working at some that prioritize people's safety and autonomy. Mm-hmm. And whenever I hear stuff like this too, I'm always just like, was there no, and I kind of know the answer, but like, was there no single person in the room who was like, ever over the course of a game's development, because that takes a long time too.
Oh, yeah.
No one was like, maybe this is a bad idea, or like, maybe like, you know, this is something that is hurtful to the people who
I think
are...
you get though a group of people, because I remember being in a theater room where we were basically being abused. We're being abused. Our time was being abused. I like yeah. collapsed on the stage, and I was not a virgin theater actor at this point. And I feel like creative people in this country, I'm not going to speak for other countries, feel like we are made to feel like it is a privilege to be able to do what we are doing.
Yeah.
Because there is no money in doing what we are doing. So to do it, you know, we should just be grateful. And like, to get the part, like actors especially, like to get the part, you should be grateful. And I feel like that's probably the same in like a lot of like marginalized places. So it's like, okay, yeah, I'm tired. Yeah, I'm sick of this. But, and you've got the whole crowd of people who are sick of it with you and are tired of it with you. But, you know, they're here and they're doing what they want to be doing. You know, they're happy to have the job. And they think, well, if I can just get past this rehearsal, the show will be good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure, like, I mean, I don't want to say that it's right. Like, it definitely wasn't right. We all should have said something. And a couple times we did. But I want to, like, just laud the people who do step up and say something, because it is hard to step out from that crowd
yeah.
when you have been societally conditioned to accept that this is your role and this is okay.
Yeah.
To step out from that and be like, this is not okay, and I'm not going to take it. So I want to just kudos to those people. And I think that that's a lot of why this stuff gets done. And I think mm-hmm. of a lot of why Trump's presidency, and I'm just going to call it out, was harmful, because yep. he made the umbrella of all of this misogyny and all of this racism is okay. And so he brought forth crowds of people who were like, yep, this is okay now. And it further silenced people who were already under that oppression. And it didn't make it easier for those who were on the edge or who were out. I don't know if I'm making a lot of sense, but...
No, you are.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I always refer to this country having a puritanical complex, you know, mm-hmm. And especially with the GOP and the hypocrisy that you guys were talking about in a lot of its constituency, you know, of these people who like are so adamant that their way, it's, you know, it's got to be their way or the highway. And like, they know, you know, they're the party of like family values and all that BS. But
well, there's this also fear of like, like everyone talks about the American dream, but it's like there's this huge fear of like losing what you already have.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's that fear that keeps America running where it is. If you're not in the top percent, it's like, I've gotten this much, I've scraped by this much, like, yeah. I'm afraid to make waves because I don't want to lose this much. And so it's the people that risk things that are, yeah, they're risking losing what they have. And I don't feel like we're the country that we are. We have this facade of being like of this, like, oh, let's go out and conquer, like, yeah, go out and build yourself. It's the American dream. You can't really go out and build yourself without help here. Like, you, yeah, can't.
Well, that was another layer to the Tennessee 3 thing that went down recently. You know, footage went out of this one guy who was arguing about expelling Representative Pearson. And he was talking about it, and he was like, if you have an issue, just pass a bill. That's what you're supposed to do in this House. The thing is that Tennessee currently has a supermajority of Republican representatives. It's like 79% or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, mm-hmm, any bill that he puts forth, that a Democratic congressman puts forth, is going to be shot down almost immediately just because he's a Democrat. So it's like
they were cutting off their mics. They were trying to bring up gun control and they were, yeah, cutting off their mics, which is
there's
why
that, yep, too. But at the base level, like, the guy is super condescending. What he's basically saying is that just do that thing that you were elected to do. Oh, you can't? Well, sucks to be you. But anyway, on that happy note, I think it's about time we go ahead and wrap this episode up. I know it wasn't necessarily a happy episode. I kind of meant it to be that way, but I hope this.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest narrative and mood turn that, as a friend of the podcast, I've ever experienced recording one of these episodes. You know, because I remember I was like, "Oh my god, yeah, Dean's saying that this episode is going to be spicy. We're going to talk about Metroid," and now we're like, "The United States is fundamentally broken." Like, Jesus.
But like I said, I'd rather tell a story that's truthful rather than being a feel good story. So.
But agree to that.
Again, looking at Metroid Prime in a really roundabout way of looking at it, something good came of it. Which Metroid Prime features a very strong female protagonist. So
I was going to say, I mean, I can cap us off. I don't believe that men are capable of being feminists entirely. Like, I try to be as feminist as I can be,
yeah,
but I don't believe that men are usually, like, fundamentally feminists just because, you know, they're men. But as far as feminism in video game goes, Metroid was the OG in terms of that, you know? The fact that the game developers were like, oh yeah, we're gonna have all of these, you know, all of these players go through this game, and they think that they're playing as like this super badass guy in a suit, and then at the end they take their helmet off and it was a woman the whole time. What a fucking baller move, you know?
I'm gonna throw this out there. I think it kind of speaks to what should be the conversation of gender in narrative video game storytelling. But the fact that Samus is a female was something that was brought up, like, offhandedly halfway through development. Like, one of the designers was literally turned to one of the others and was like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if she was a girl? Which I would love to live in a world where a character's gender has that least amount of impact on something.
Yeah, bearing on the story and whatnot.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Objectively, she's destroyed at least 3 planets, which is awesome.
It'd be nice if our language had a gender-neutral pronoun.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, we have they, but, like, it'd be nice if there was, like, a singular one.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Those of you listening, I encourage all of you to reach out to any kind of LGBTQ plus charity that might be in your area, or some sort of women's rights or abortion rights charities that might be in your area. I'm sorry, I don't have anything super eloquent.
You can put some in the show notes.
I'll see what I can do. But given everything that we've talked about in this episode, I think they could definitely use some support right now, not only based on what we've talked about in this episode, but the state of the world as well.
Or nothing throw some dollars into the environment.
That too. That also helps. Try not to be like Samus and destroy planets.
Yes.
That being said, let's go ahead and wrap up. Joe, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode. I know it wasn't the easiest episode to be a part of, but I appreciate having somebody as considerate and compassionate as you on the episode to help walk us through this treacherous path. So
I always enjoy hopping on with you guys to talk about video games and the weird, strange, and as we saw today, disgusting circumstances that lead to their creation. And I just want to second all of everything that you said, and just, you know, everyone, just please be kind to each other. That's all. Yeah. We don't have
enough time or energy to not be nice to each other. So please.
Seriously.
Yeah. So, Joe, do you have anything that you'd like to plug before we wrap up today's episode?
I in lieu of plugging anything that I'm doing, I would just say if you're in or around Chicago and you're looking for, one of the kinds of organizations that Dean was talking about to give to, Brave Space Alliance is a Black and trans and generally LGBTQ+ led organization that's on the south side of Chicago that does a lot of good work. You should give your money to them if you're in or around Chicago, or if you're not, you can as well. Also, I'm very excited about the mayor that we just elected in Chicago, Brandon Johnson. I'm hoping that he manages to enact some policy and program changes that are going to take at least our city, not our whole country, out of some of the darkness we were talking about. So yeah, Brave Space Alliance, check them out. If you're looking for other interesting Chicago or great Chicago organizations, My Block, My Hood, My City is also a good one that generally just helps people on the south side of Chicago. And there's a ton of other ones too, but that's all I want to plug, honestly.
All right. Meredith.
I will go ahead and promote Thistle Farms in Nashville. They help women survivors of trafficking, prostitution, and addiction. Mm. So if you're looking, and they make delicious candles and stuff. So if we're looking to be altruistic in that way, Thistle Farms, they also have an amazing coffee shop. And I am going to go ahead and be selfish and promote my own book, Ghost Tamer, that is coming out in September.
Woo!
I talked with Meredith before the recording, and what I think we're going to do is record like a pre-recorded thing that we're going to stick on the end of the episode that you can listen to for pre-order availability and stuff like that. Comes out in September. It's going to be awesome. Please support my wife.
But and we'll have some pre-order goodies too, like eventually.
But all of that being said, that's about all we've got time for today. Again, Joe, thank you so much for being with us today. Meredith, always thank you.
You're this very welcome. I'm no longer mad at you.
Awesome.
Aw. I am.
Good! this has been Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good one. Bye.